Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Hello, good morning, everyone, or at least good morning for me. I should say kind of good morning because it's one of those days where I recorded this episode in its entirety, and then when I went to edit it, I found out that it was, for some reason, on the wrong microphone, and it sounded terrible. So I'm going to re-record the episode, and this time I will make sure to do it with the right microphone. So I started by saying that essentially when it comes to mitigating the effects of consequences or contributors to collapse, that I often find myself frequently thinking about and analyzing and trying to just figure out what can I do to protect myself and my family, right? I want to be able to avoid the worst impacts of what's coming, at least to the best of my ability. Now, obviously, that's not always possible, and it's very understood that most of what will happen in collapse is not going to be within my control and is not something that I can even mitigate. But that said, in going through that process and thinking about that, I find that so much of what I want to do in my daily life, it's either unavoidable, there's so much to it that I can't quite wrap my head around at all, or you know, my brain power, my time, energy, and focus is on other things. And I don't want to spend my entire life stressing about these items. In this case, I am referring specifically to plastics. You know, I'm drinking this morning from a plastic water bottle, not a disposable water bottle that you would get from the store, but a sturdy, reusable, you know, this should last me a while type water bottle. I drank a Fairlife protein shake this morning out of a plastic bottle. I use a plastic mouse and a plastic keyboard using a pen that's plastic. I touch my phone 1,000 times a day that has a plastic phone case. Plastic is everywhere, and quite frankly, it's unavoidable. We've done multiple episodes on this podcast regarding microplastics, regarding the pollution impacts of creating and disposing of plastics, the failure of recycling, the myth of recycling, I guess you could say, and what plastics are doing to ecosystems, to wildlife, and to our oceans. Today's episode is going to focus on a couple new pieces of research. There's two different articles that I'm going to read from that highlight some of the impacts of both plastic production up to this point and the future impacts of plastic production as well. These are both on phys.org, and I do want to highlight that phys.org is an aggregator. So it, you know, brings together news kind of like AP does, or some of those other websites, Apple News, but this one's specifically for science news. So you can find a link to the actual original sources if you were to follow the source that I post here from phys.org. All right, so this first article is titled Plastics Everywhere and the Myth That Made It Possible. This article highlights someone named Judith Enck, who is an author of a new book around plastics called The Problem with Plastics. And she highlights some research that states that half of all plastic ever produced has been produced since the year 2007. So in just the last 19 years or so, and this stat is amazing to me, since I was just 17 years old, we have produced as much plastic as was ever produced before that date. And it's not slowing down. The author, again, Judith Enck, was a former senior environment official under Barack Obama, and it says that she's clear-eyed about the challenges posed by the rabidly anti-environmental President Donald Trump. Last year, the administration helped derail a global plastics treaty and reversed a phase-out of single-use plastics in national parks. And in just a moment, I'm going to read another article, the second research that I mentioned, which talks more about the future impacts of plastics and the impacts on health. But I think we can kind of see that there's three real problems to our plastic issue right now, right? One is that we're producing more than ever. The second is that we don't really know a good way of disposing of it. And the third is that our leaders, our administrations, our corporations are not doing anything to try and mitigate those first two problems. They're making it worse. And especially the U.S. presidency and administration right now is actively trying to roll back those regulations. Enck makes this statement. She says that talking about the myth of plastic recycling, talking about how in the United States only 5 to 6% of plastics gets recycled and that the amount is decreasing. She talks about how there's this new chemical recycling that is supposed to be the new buzzword for plastics recycling, in that it's a way that corporations can excuse their behaviors and production of plastics in order to say there's new ways that we're coming up with to fix this. Talking about how this chemical recycling only takes care of 1% of U.S. plastic waste, and that 3 of the 11 factories meant to take care of this have shut down for one reason or another. For some other stats that are stated here, talks about 33 billion pounds of plastic entering the ocean every year, which is the equivalent to 2 large garbage trucks filled with plastic being dumped into the ocean every single minute of every single day. And one thing I found interesting from this research and this article, it actually links to another interesting bit of research done from 2023, which states that, according to researchers, the climate impact of plastic pollution is negligible when compared to the production of new plastics, which they say is the real problem. What they're trying to say here is that the carbon leaching out of existing plastic pollution has a negligible impact on climate change, on the addition of CO2 to the atmosphere. The bigger concern, they say, is the production of new plastics, which accounts for 4.5% of total global carbon emissions. I mean, that seems fairly obvious that from a climate change perspective, the existing plastics, they leach off some CO2, but that's not going to be near as much as the production of new plastics, which is increasing. It does not, of course, though, take into account the environmental and pollution impacts that the plastics that already exist have, right? The breakdown into microplastics, the effects on ecosystems, on wildlife, and all these different things. Those are massive. That's a massive deal considering the amount of plastic that we have put into the oceans. They even go further in that research to say that the impact, you know, they analyze the impact of incineration of plastics, which is one method for disposing of it. They said they used a scenario in which all plastic projected to be produced in the year 2050 would be burned and directly converted into atmospheric CO2. In this scenario, we found atmospheric CO2 increased a little over 21 parts per million. By the year 2100, this increase is equivalent to the impact of fewer than 9 years of current fossil fuel emissions. And what's interesting is that they're trying to use those numbers to say that it wouldn't make that big of an impact. 9 years worth of emissions just to get rid of the plastics that we produce in the year 2050. This seems like an astronomical amount of emissions to me. However, again, the idea of what they're trying to get across is that we need to stop producing new plastics now. And that's obviously pertinent, right? If almost 5% of our global emissions come from plastics, and that amount's going to continue to increase year over year, that is significant. And of course, all of the pollution impacts that that new plastic will create as well. Okay, we're going to go on to the second bit of research here. This was released on January 27th. It states, the global health impacts of plastic systems set to double by 2040. So in the last one, we talked about how, okay, plastics have doubled from 2007 to today, but the global health impacts are set to double again in another 14 years between now and 2040. The article says the adverse health impacts associated with emissions across the full life cycle of plastics could double by 2040 unless immediate action is taken. The study identified health harms at every stage of the life cycle of the plastics we use, from the extraction of fossil fuels, the feedstocks for more than 90% of plastics, and material production to their eventual disposal or release to the environment. The research was published originally in The Lancet Planetary Health. Their modeling then suggests that under a business as usual scenario by 2040, the negative health impacts from plastics could double with greenhouse gas emissions and associated rising global temperatures, accounting for 40% of health harms. So they've kind of broken down what the health harms actually are. They're saying 40% of all of the harms from plastics projected by the year 2040 will come from direct impact on climate change. Air pollution, predominantly from plastic production processes, would account for 32% of the overall health harms. And the impact of toxic chemicals released to the environment across plastics life cycles would be 27% of the harm. It says that less than 1% related to reduced availability of water impacts on the ozone and increased ionizing radiation. So that 27% they talk about coming from the chemicals being released, that is basically talking about microplastics as those plastics break down. chemicals released into our water streams, into our food systems, into our bodies, and into, you know, animal ecosystems. The article says that this study is the first of its kind to assess the number of healthy years of life lost due to greenhouse gases, air pollutants, and toxic chemicals emitted across the life cycle of plastics at a global scale. These emissions are linked to the health impacts of global warming, respiratory illnesses, cancer, and other serious diseases. The model found that if the plastic systems continue with no change to policy, economics, infrastructure, materials, or consumer behaviors, annual health impacts could more than double. Overall, the study estimates that the global plastic system could be responsible for cutting 83 million years of healthy population life between 2016 and 2040. Now, that is wild to me. 83 million years of human life lost in the years between 2016 and 2040. And of course, that's not counting animal life, plant life, and all other life on Earth. It's also not counting the future impact of lives lost from the climate change added from the pollution of or the production of these plastics. So even though, you know, it goes till 2040, in 2041 and 2045 and 2050, we will still be feeling the impacts that came directly from the production of these plastics due to CO2 emissions. Okay, I'm going to finish by reading a statement here at the end, or a few statements. It says, this is from Megan Deeney, study author and research fellow at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. She said, our research shows that the adverse health impacts of plastics stretch far beyond the point at which we buy a plastic product or put plastic items in a recycling bin. Often the blame is put on us as individual consumers of plastics to solve the problem. But while we all have an important role to play in reducing the use of plastics, our analysis shows systemic change is needed. From the cradle to the grave of plastic production, use, and disposal, much more ambitious action from governments and industry transparency is needed to curb this growing global plastics public health crisis. Industry non-disclosure and inconsistent reporting of plastics' chemical composition is severely limiting the ability of life cycle assessments to inform effective policy to protect humans, ecosystems, and the environment. It ends with her talking about the fact that there are obvious and inherent limitations to models such as these, for better or worse, right? And it offers a statement that the current trajectory is not tenable. We have real feasible alternatives, global action that centers on substantial collective reductions to plastic production and eliminating the use of hazardous chemicals across products are needed at scale to protect people and planet. Sounds pretty easy, right? All we need to do is come together as a massive collection of humanity and make systemic changes from the level of our governments and corporations to essentially tell them to stop making as much money as they're making from the creation and distribution of these plastics. Sometimes I know I'm pessimistic about these things, but we're going in the opposite direction, right? Our governments are dismantling any regulations that were in place, which were already not effective enough. And then I think about, with these issues, again, my personal responsibility to help, to be better. I again recognize that I purchased the Fairlife drinks, right, from Costco that are made in plastic bottles, and that I am drinking from a plastic water bottle today. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, daily, my brain is filled with all of the hundreds or thousands of different things that I could or should be doing to A, help the environment, to B, protect myself and my family, help us stay safe, and recognizing that I can't always protect myself. And when I read these articles, you know, it always brings it again to the front of my mind, and it will linger with me for a while, and I'll do better. But then I'll realize that I'm lacking in other areas, and it's this cyclical problem. And I wonder if you experience that as well. And if not, please enlighten me on how to manage it. Okay, I'm going to read real quick from one more article. This is a slightly different topic, but along the same lines of pollution. Instead, this is regarding air pollution. It's from The Independent, and it's titled Prolonged Air Pollution Linked to Increase of Incurable Muscle Wasting Diseases. Swedish scientists found that long-term exposure to air pollution was associated with a 20 to 30% higher risk of developing motor neuron disease, or MND, including ALS, even in the relatively low levels found in Sweden. They said that MND affects up to 5,000 adults in the UK at any time and is caused by the degradation of nerve cells that leads to muscle weakness and atrophy. ALS is the most common form of the disease. And you may remember ALS bucket challenge, the ice bucket challenge from a decade or so ago, where people would pour cold water on their heads and then nominate someone else to do the same thing and spread it on social media in an effort to raise awareness and funds into the research of ALS. And that is specifically what they're talking about here. They say we can see a clear association despite the fact that levels of air pollution in Sweden are lower than many other countries. This underlines the importance of improving air quality. The team studied about 1,500 participants in Sweden with recently diagnosed MND who were compared with 1,700 siblings and over 7,000 matched controls from the general population. Researchers analyzed levels of particles and nitrogen dioxide at their home up to 10 years prior to their diagnoses. In this study, they found those who had been exposed to air pollution for long periods of time had a 20 to 30% greater risk of developing MND. Strikingly, those who lived in the most polluted areas experienced quicker deterioration. They also had an elevated risk of death and were more likely to need treatment in an invasive ventilator, according to the study. They also add that our results suggest that air pollution might not only contribute to the onset of the disease, but also affect how quickly it progresses. They also stress the results cannot show a causal link, but the previous research suggests air pollution can cause inflammation and oxidative stress in the nervous systems. This comes after leading doctors warned that air pollution has been linked to around 30,000 deaths last year in the UK alone, with 99% of the population breathing in toxic air. There is no safe level of air pollution, they say, which negatively affects nearly every organ in the body. This according to the Royal College of Physicians. Now, again, just hearkening back to whenever I read these articles or these studies, I think about the fact that I can't escape that, right? I can't completely escape plastics. And even if I completely kicked out plastics from my own life, I'm still going to be consuming microplastics that are in the atmosphere. It literally rains down on us, right? I breathe it in through the dust. It's on my clothing. It's everywhere. Same thing with air pollution. I can use a filter in my home. I can move myself to an area of the world with less air pollution, but any amount is still dangerous, and there is no escaping it completely. And I could drive myself crazy with that, right? With anxiety. I could let myself fear every day for the unknowns of what is happening to me because of these things. And I'll be completely transparent and I guess vulnerable here a little bit, that I am a little bit, I think, of a hypochondriac, just in that when, you know, I hear about a new disease or I have the slightest symptom of something, I start to spiral and I do the thing where I Google it and freak myself out about what it could be. And then I start to feel other symptoms of it because that's what the internet said I could be feeling. And so I can't let myself do that. And it's the same thing with constantly worrying. Are microplastics, you know, eating my cells alive and causing cancer? And in the end, I have to just do this stoic exercises, right? In which I understand there's certain things I can't control and I don't let them control me. The more I stress out about these things, the worst impacts they're going to have because our bodies don't react well to stress. So I am trying personally to do better at just going with the flow and enjoying the life that I have until I don't have it any longer. And knowing that part of collapse is the simple fact that my life will possibly or likely be shortened. Anyway, glad you're here. Thanks for being a part of the podcast. I appreciate always your support. We'll catch you tomorrow.
Neulich bei der Versicherung.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof. Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof.
Sie verstehen bei Ihrem Berater nur Bahnhof? Zeit zu Ergo zu wechseln, denn da verstehen Sie nur.
Einfach.
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 Einfach. Einfach.
Einfach.
Einfach.
Einfach.
Denn wir machen Versichern einfacher. Einfach, weil's wichtig ist. Ergo.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.